Welcome to Richard Ellis Talks with Richard Ellis. Richard's going to take the next few minutes to share some great words of hope, insight, humor, and relevance. In today's lost and searching world, that's something everyone desperately needs to hear. Speaking of that, we'd love to keep this conversation going with you anytime through our website, richardellistalks.com. In fact, there's so many ways to connect with us from there that you really need to check it out for yourself, richardellistalks.com. But right now, let's go ahead and get things off and running with today's talk. Here's Richard Ellis.
The title of today's message is Easter Hat Trick. How many of y'all know what a hat trick is, first of all? Raise your hand. Okay, a lot of people. If you don't, let me just read you. According to the extended Oxford English Dictionary 1999 edition, the term, quote, came into use after H.H. Stevenson took three wickets, and this is in cricket, he took three wickets and three balls for the All England 11 against the 22 of Hallam in the Hyde Park ground, Sheffield, in 1858. A collection was held for Stevenson, as was customary for outstanding feats by professionals, and he was presented with a cap or a hat bought with the proceeds. So if you score three times, a hat trick. So we're going to look at an Easter hat trick. And I want you to go to Matthew chapter 20 to begin with. If you've got an actual Bible, some people still own those, maybe on your device of some kind. Matthew chapter 20 and verse 17. And it says this, "Now Jesus, going up to Jerusalem, took the 12 disciples aside on the road and said to them," so they're on the way to Jerusalem, he pulls over kind of with the 12, and this is what he says. "So look, behold, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man," talking about himself, "the Son of Man will be betrayed to the chief priests and to the scribes, and they will condemn him to death and deliver him to the Gentiles to mock and to scourge and to crucify, and the third day he will rise again." So Jesus is calling it exactly like it's going to happen before it even happens. So if you're one of these 12, he's been talking about this, the Son of Man's got to die, be buried, raised from the dead. He keeps saying this over and over. He talks about the cross. He hasn't died on a cross, but he keeps referring to this cross, to him dying, to him being raised from the dead, which is kind of lunacy. If you're following some guy, a lot of guys can get themselves killed, but not many people can get themselves raised from the dead. So he knows this is game time. This is what he came to do. He's going to Jerusalem, and at least three major things have to happen. One of the goals is he's got to figure out a way to get himself killed. Then he's got to get himself in the ground by a certain time in order to pull off his hat trick, which is to be raised from the dead on a specific day. So you think, well, this just happened. This is not something that just happens, because a lot of this is out of his control. He is God, but he is dependent on a lot of moving parts and even evil people participating in the plan to get him killed. So he gives them the plan in Matthew 20. Now we're going to jump around a little bit here. How do you get yourself crucified? Go to Luke chapter 22. If you're going to get yourself killed, here's a few things. It's not, you know, go to Jerusalem. That's a good place to get yourself killed. Have a guy on your team who will betray you and claim to be God. And that created a lot of problems for Jesus, and he didn't do it on purpose. He was God, so he just was himself. But that's part of what created the challenge. Luke 22, verse 3. "Then Satan entered Judas, surnamed Iscariot." This is one of his 12 guys that he picked. And it literally says here that Satan, not meaning some evil spirit, but Satan himself, entered Judas, surnamed Iscariot, who was numbered among the 12. So he went his way and conferred with the chief priests and captains how he might betray him to them. And they were glad and agreed to give him money. So he promised and sought opportunity to betray him to them in the absence of the multitude. Man, whatever you do, don't let Satan get in you. That is not a good situation. So you say, well, what does this have to do with anything? All hell had been breaking loose and now breaks loose where Satan himself enters this guy, Judas, and starts moving him in the direction to be a part of getting Jesus killed. Go to Matthew 26. So we got the devil and Judas involved in this. Now, if you think it's crazy already, literally the people that God himself, the Israelites, the Jews who are on the planet, and the religious leaders among those people are kind of pivotal in getting Jesus crucified. You think this is not even possible? You think you're missing Jesus? The people that were supposed to be looking for Messiah completely missed him. Most of the rulers, at least, the guys that were leading. Look at verse 59. Now the chief priests, the elders, and all the council sought false testimony against Jesus to put him to death. They are literally have gotten to the point where they say, okay, we want him dead so bad. We are so angry at this guy. We want him dead so bad. We will find false witnesses to get rid of him. So they sought false testimony against Jesus to put him to death, but found none. Even though many false witnesses came forward, they found none. So people came up and said, I'll say this. Couldn't find anybody that would hold water. Even though many false witnesses came forward, they found none. But at last, two false witnesses came forward and said, this fellow said, I am able to destroy the temple of God and to build it in 3 days. And the high priest arose and said to him, do you answer nothing? So Jesus is there. They bring these false witnesses in. He says, do you say nothing? What is it that these men testify against you? But Jesus kept silent. And the high priest answered and said to him, I put you under oath by the living God. In other words, I'm going to make you swear by yourself, which he didn't get that at that moment. I put you under oath by the living God. Tell us if you are the Christ, the Son of God. Straight up. And this guy is looking at the Christ, the Son of God, and completely misses it. Jesus said to him, it is as you said. And he should have just left it at that because that sounds crazy. But look what he goes on to say. Nevertheless, I say to you, hereafter you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the power and coming on the clouds of heaven. Then the high priest tore his clothes saying, he has spoken blasphemy. What further need do we have of witnesses? We don't need witnesses. He finally said it out of his own mouth. What did Jesus say but the truth? And that's part of what got him killed. Go to Leviticus chapter 24. I'll give you a little backup on what we just read out of Matthew. Leviticus 24, 16. And whosoever blasphemes the name of the Lord shall surely be put to death. All the congregation shall certainly stone him, and the stranger as well as him who is born in the land. When he blasphemes the name of the Lord, he shall be put to death. Now, what does it say? You blaspheme, you get stoned. Why didn't they stone Jesus? It's the Passover. They want him crucified. They don't want to take matters in their own hands. They want the government to kick in and take care of executing Jesus. They could have stoned him. That's not what was supposed to happen. You say, well, who cooperated to pull this off? It's God at work. And unfortunately, you're either on God's team or you're on the other team. And you might be used by God whether you like it or not. You say, well, God's not using me. How do you know? Go back over to John chapter 18. Let's keep reading here. We're still just trying to get him dead the right way. John 18, 28. Then they led Jesus from Caiaphas to the praetorium, and it was early morning, but they themselves did not go into the praetorium, lest, and this is so crazy to me as well, lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. So these people are trying to get the Messiah, Son of God, killed, and they're worried about technical things about their religion. It just doesn't make any, religious people are crazy people sometimes, but anyhow. Another sermon. Pilate then went out to them and said, what accusation do you bring against this man? They answered and said to him, if he were not an evildoer, we would not have delivered him to you. Like, why are you asking why we brought him? If he didn't do something wrong, we wouldn't be here. Didn't answer their question. Like, dude, just take him. Then Pilate said to them, you take him and judge him according to your law. Therefore, the Jews said to him, it is not lawful for us to put anyone to death. That the saying of Jesus might be fulfilled which he spoke, signifying by what death he would die. So we've found a reason. We can't put him to death. You got to kill him. It's up to you now. And Romans crucified people, crucified non-Romans. Very rarely did a Roman get crucified. It was against the law pretty much to crucify a Roman. Jesus, even the fact that he's not a Roman citizen, enables him to be crucifiable. Then Pilate entered the praetorium again, called Jesus and said to him, are you the king of the Jews? Jesus answered him, are you speaking for yourself about this, or did others tell you concerning this? Or like, is this a question you have personally, or did someone else say something that caused you to ask this question? Pilate answered, am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you to me. What have you done? Jesus answered, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight so that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now my kingdom is not from here. Pilate therefore said to him, are you a king then? Jesus answered, you say rightly that I am a king. Straight up again saying, I am a king. You know what kind of king he is? He is the king of kings. For this cause I was born, and for this cause I have come into the world, that I should bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice. Pilate said to him, what is truth? And when he had said this, he went out again to the Jews and said to them, I find no fault in him at all. This guy has done nothing worthy of death. But you have a custom that I should release someone to you at the Passover. Do you therefore want me to release to you the king of the Jews? Then they all cried again, saying, not this man, but Barabbas. Now Barabbas was a robber, and they start screaming, crucify. And finally, he gives in, washes his hands literally, and says, okay, we'll crucify him. Go to John 19, verse 1. So then Pilate took Jesus and scourged him, and the soldiers twisted a crown of thorns and put it on his head, and they put on a purple robe. Then they said, hail, King of the Jews, and they struck him with their hands. Pilate then went out again and said to them, behold, I am bringing him out to you, that you may know that I find no fault in him. Then Jesus came out, wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, and Pilate said to him, behold the man. Therefore, when the chief priests and officers saw him, they cried out, saying, crucify him, crucify him. Pilate said to them, you take him and crucify him, for I find no fault in him. He keeps saying it over and over again. The Jews answered him, we have a law, and according to our law, he ought to die because he made himself the Son of God. He didn't make himself the Son of God. He is the Son of God. Therefore, when Pilate heard that saying, he was the more afraid and went again into the praetorium and said to Jesus, where are you from? But Jesus gave him no answer. Then Pilate said to him, are you not speaking to me? Do you not know that I have power to crucify you and power to release you? Jesus then answered, you could have no power at all against me unless it had been given you from above. Therefore, the one who delivered me to you has the greater sin. From then on, Pilate sought to release him, but the Jews cried out, saying, if you let this man go, you are not Caesar's friend. Whoever makes himself a king speaks against Caesar. When Pilate therefore heard that saying, he brought Jesus out and sat down in the judgment seat in a place that is called the pavement, but in Hebrew, Gabbatha. Now it was the preparation day of the Passover and about the sixth hour, and he said to the Jews, behold your king. But they cried out, away with him, away with him. Crucify him. Pilate said to them, shall I crucify your king? The chief priests answered, we have no king but Caesar. Then he delivered him to be crucified. Then they took Jesus and led him away. And I recommend you go sometime today and read the rest of that about the crucifixion. Okay, so we got him dead. Now, as interesting as that is, you say, okay, well, Jesus got crucified. I do not just need Jesus crucified. I don't need him just dead. I need him buried. The second goal is to get him buried. Go to John 19, keep going down there. Go to verse 30 in that chapter. So he's almost dead on this cross. So when Jesus had received the sour wine, he said, it is finished, and bowing his head, he gave up his spirit. Therefore, because it was the preparation day that the body should not remain on the cross on the Sabbath, for the Sabbath was a high day, the Jews asked Pilate that their legs might be broken and they might be taken away. So literally the Jews are so freaked out about their religious holiday, they can't leave this dead guy on a cross, so they participate in getting him buried. It's unbelievable, the course of events. And it's just God letting them do their thing in all their religiosity. They are literally getting him killed and getting him in the ground in time for him to be there long enough and be raised the third day. Exactly like he said. At some point, you've got to understand God is working in your life, whether you get it or believe it or not. He's got a plan. He knows what he's doing. He's working circumstances. You don't meet people randomly. You're not listening to this randomly. You're not here randomly. Maybe you didn't want to be here. You're here. So pay attention to what's going on around you. Like, how is all of this happening? So the soldiers went and broke the legs of the first. The other was crucified with him. But when they came to Jesus, he was already dead. They didn't break his legs. One of the soldiers pierced his side with a spear. Immediately blood and water came out. And he who has seen has testified, and his testimony is true. And he knows that he is telling the truth so that you may believe. For these things were done that the scripture should be fulfilled. Not one of his bones shall be broken. And again, another scripture says, they shall look on him whom they pierced. And then look at this next piece. After this, Joseph of Arimathea, being a disciple of Jesus, a follower of Jesus, this rich guy named Joseph of Arimathea, but secretly, he'd been kind of following Jesus secretly for fear of the Jews, asked Pilate that he might take away the body of Jesus. And Pilate gave him permission, so he came and took the body of Jesus. Everybody plays their part in the big picture. So play your part. So literally, Joseph of Arimathea here is part of getting Jesus in the ground in time. And Nicodemus, who at first came to Jesus by night, you can go read about him in John chapter 3. he came to Jesus by night, also came bringing a mixture of myrrh and aloes, about 100 pounds. Then they took the body of Jesus, bound it in strips of linen with the spices, as the custom of the Jews is to bury. Now in the place where he was crucified, there was a garden, and in the garden a new tomb in which no one yet had been laid. So there they laid Jesus because of the Jews' preparation day, for the tomb was nearby. So he goes from a virgin womb to a virgin tomb, and everything is set for the hat trick. And if this is not enough, go to Matthew 27. On the next day, which followed the day of preparation, the chief priests and Pharisees gathered together Pilate. They're not done. We got him killed, but we're still nervous. Why are you nervous about this guy? And they go saying, "Sir, we remember while he was still alive how that deceiver said, 'After 3 days I will arise.'" They know what Jesus said. "Therefore, command that the tomb be made secure until the third day, lest his disciples come by night and steal him away and say to the people, 'He's risen from the dead.'" Right? Because that's what he claims. "So let's steal his body and we'll make something up. So the last deception will be worse than the first." Pilate said to them, "You have a guard." So now it's a Roman guard has been assigned to go guard a dead man in a tomb. Now, if you think that's not nuts, who guards a tomb from a dead person escaping? Maybe someone trying to break in, but you don't have a lot of problem with people breaking out of tombs. So he says, "You have a guard, go your way, make it as secure as you know how. So lock it down, whatever you want to do." So they went and made the tomb secure, sealing the stone and setting the guard. Jesus is trapped in the tomb. There's no way out. The hat trick. Matthew 28. This is the stuff I like. Matthew 28:1. "Now after the Sabbath, as the first day of the week began to dawn," so the sun is just coming up in Jerusalem, "Mary Magdalene, the other Mary, came to see the tomb. And behold, there was a great earthquake, for an angel of the Lord descended from heaven and came and rolled back the stone from the door and sat on it." And what I love about this is Jesus didn't wait till noon to be raised from the dead. He got out of there as soon as he could. It's the third day, sun's up, sun's out. So keep reading. "Great earthquake, angel of the Lord descended from heaven, came and rolled back the stone from the door and sat on it. His countenance was like lightning and his clothing is white as snow, and the guards shook." So the guards are still there doing their job. What power do they have over a lightning angel? "The guards shook for fear of him and became like dead men." They're laying there just frozen, dead, terrified. "But the angel answered and said to the women, 'Do not be afraid.'" You see how afraid these guys are? You should not be afraid. I know you're probably afraid because you should be afraid, but don't be afraid. I'm not going to strike you with lightning. "Do not be afraid, for I know that you seek Jesus who was crucified." I know why you're here. You're looking for Jesus. He's not here, for he is risen, as he said. He's not here. "Come, see the place where the Lord lay, and go quickly and tell his disciples that he is risen from the dead, and indeed he is going before you into Galilee. Therefore you will see him. Behold, I have told you." This is so simple. An angel, these women go, "He's not here. Nobody home. He is risen just like he said." Now, here's how simple this is. You either believe that or you don't. But here's the challenge. Your whole life and your whole eternity is riding on that fact. He is either dead or he's alive. That's why Easter is such a huge deal. It is not enough for him to be dead. It is not enough for us to give him a proper burial. I need this Jesus alive or I have no hope of life, not just in this life or in the life to come. I need somebody who can overcome my sin. I need someone who can overcome Satan, who steal, kill, destroy in my life. I need someone who can overcome hell, who can overcome death, the grave. Who have you got to fight in your behalf to take on all of those enemies? I got Jesus. I got a living Jesus. Keep reading. "So they went out quickly from the tomb with fear and great joy and ran to bring his disciples word. And as they went to tell the disciples, behold, Jesus met them saying, 'Rejoice!'" There you go. That's something to say. "So they came and held him by his feet and worshiped him. Then Jesus said to them, 'Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brethren to go to Galilee, and there they will see me.' Now when they were going, behold, some of the guard came into the city." And look at how convoluted this still is. Some of the guard, these guys who were terrified, they know what they had seen. You know, Even if they don't believe Jesus has been raised from the dead, they saw an angel and they are freaked completely out. They came into the city, reported to the chief priests all the things that had happened. So they told them, angel, stone rolled away, Jesus is gone, what do we do? And you think that even that they would go, oh my gosh, we made a terrible mistake. He is the Messiah. But no, look what they do. When they had assembled with the elders and consulted together, they're handing out cash again like they did to Judas. They gave a large sum of money to the soldiers, bribed the soldiers saying, tell them his disciples came at night and stole him away while we slept. And if this comes to the governor's ears, we will appease him and make you secure. So they took the money and did as they were instructed. And this saying is commonly reported among the Jews until this day when that was written. I don't care who you pay money to bribe him to keep quiet. You can't keep quiet that Jesus is raised from the dead because he's alive. It doesn't matter what anybody says. He's alive. Now, here's my other shot at you. Just listen close. Let's say you don't believe any of this, but you've managed to sit through this because you're stuck and you've heard it. Here's what you do. You say, I don't believe any of this. It is very difficult to unhear what you have heard and to unknow what you know. Even if you do a cosmic la, 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 put your fingers in yours and say, I don't want to think about this. I don't want to think about this. It's not going to go away. So today you may turn it away and God may be merciful still to you, and somewhere later today, a week, a year, 10 years, somewhere down the road, you may end up out of control in a spot where you have no answers. Remember that someone told you somewhere along the way that God loves you and that he sent his son Jesus, born of a virgin, to die on a cross, to be buried and raised from the dead for you. And wherever you come to that place, and that understanding, you don't need to call a preacher. You don't need anybody. You call out to Jesus and confess with your mouth the Lord Jesus and believe in your heart that God raised from the dead, and he'll save you right there just like that. So here's how simple this is. Some of you have checked out a long time ago. Some people turned this off and gone on their way. Some of you are going, something's up with this preaching thing. Something's up with what you're saying. Something's been going on inside of me. I can't shake this. I feel like God himself is on me, like he does care about me, like there is hope, there are answers, and he may be it. And I actually think I might believe that. Then if your little heart had literally little hands and you could reach out the hands of your heart, then just say, God, you're right. I'm wrong. I can't do this anymore. I don't want to live by myself. I don't want to die by myself. I don't want what I have anymore. I want you. And you take him into your hand, into your heart, into your life, and simply say, God, I'm a sinner. I need your forgiveness. I do believe Jesus died for me, shed his blood, paid for my sin, was buried, raised from the dead. Come live in me, through me, change me, and he will. And whether anybody else likes it or agrees with it or comes along with you, it doesn't matter. Do something with your life and let him give his life to your life and change your life forever. That simple.
Richard will be back in a moment to wrap up today's talk. But first, I want to share a couple of thoughts with you. Let's be honest. Real life isn't about living some highlight reel for others to see. Most people have deep hurts, questions, and struggles. Well, we get it, and we want to help you in any way we can. So let's keep this conversation going. You can give us a call anytime at 855-6-RICHARD or connect with us at our website, richardellistalks.com. You can even put in your prayer request right there on the prayer wall. Call us at 855-6-RICHARD or online at richardellistalks.com. And now let's get back to Richard with a final word on today's show.
Let me read you one more. 1 Corinthians 15, and then we're done. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 1. And this is Paul writing to this church at Corinth, and he says, moreover, brethren, I declare to you the gospel which I preached to you, which also you received and in which you stand, by which also you are saved, if you hold fast the word which I preached to you, unless you believed in vain. For I delivered to you, first of all, that which I also received, that Christ died for our sins, according to the scriptures, goal number one, and that he was buried, goal number two, and that he rose again the third day, according to the scriptures. Hat trick. And he was seen by Cephas and by the 12. After that, he was seen by over 500 brethren at once, of whom the greater part remain to the present, but some have fallen asleep or died. The only hat Jesus got in the hat trick was a crown of thorns. But once he was raised from the dead, he got his crown back in heaven. And one day the book says, every knee will bow, every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. So here's how this goes down. Whether you believe it on this side or not, here's the sad thing. You will bow. And the day when you bow, you might remember this day and say, I should have bowed down there, not when I had to up here. Because when you have to do it up there, it's too late. Every knee will bow. Every tongue will confess. I highly encourage you to bow and confess now and get this resolved.
You've been listening to Richard Ellis Talks. We really appreciate that you've spent this time with us, but we want to keep the conversation going with you. A couple of ways you can connect with us is by giving us a call anytime at 855-6-RICHARD. That's 855-6-RICHARD. Another way is through our website, richardellistalks.com. You can email us, sign up to get the daily talk sent to your phone each day, right on the prayer wall where we can pray for you, or even stay in touch through our Facebook page at Talk with Richard. We love bringing you the program every day, but it means even more to us when you let us know how the program has helped you. So call 855-6-RICHARD or connect with us at our website, richardellistalks.com. Finally, if you enjoy the program, let us know by your generous support. It would really mean a lot to us. richardellistalks.com. So until next time, have a great day, and thank you for listening to Richard Ellis Talks.